things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah! That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Totally inappropriate, but we can record it and you can decide.
At a later date.
At a later date, if we want to keep this in.
Approximately 24 hours from now, when I'm editing, I will make that decision.
Yeah, well, it's humiliating.
I'm so excited. These are my best stories.
So, yesterday,
mm-hmm.
There's a girl, I don't know if you're following her. This might not be like the side of TikTok you're on. I'm following a girl who has kept a piece of rose quartz.
Okay.
Inside of her clitoral hood for over 38 days.
I have not followed this human, but
now that I've said it out loud, I'm sure she will pop up for you.
I'm sure she will.
It's a great way to get like bacterial vaginosis.
Yeah.
Oh, whatever.
My UTIs could never.
No, I could. My pH would never be less balanced. So I was talking to Ian about this and I was like, I just don't like, I am a full-blooded witch. Do not get this. And Ian was like, what's a clitoral hood? So I'm trying to explain it and like give him like the hand signs and like explain it. He was like, I don't get it. So I Googled it.
Okay.
And I was like, here it is.
This is it.
And so my Google search, and I search for like real pictures because the diagrams weren't doing anything.
Right.
So I just have Vagooters
on
my Google page right now. So fast forward to today.
When you just slid the like Google out of the way, right? You didn't actually like shut down.
No, of course not. I showed him what a clitoral hood was.
You hit the home button.
I hit the home button and went back to TikTok.
Yep.
So today.
Yeah.
I'm getting a new phone.
Oh no.
At Verizon.
Oh.
And we were meeting his family at an ice rink to go skating, and I was like, oh, I need to like look up and see, and my phone is sitting on the table hooked up like downloading whatever for Verizon. So yeah. I hit my dang old home button and I go to Google the open ice hours, and it's me and Ian and our Verizon rep, and what do I do? But I open Google and there are just Vagooters galore, just
everywhere. Just out.
But like the 16 with clitoral hood real photo as my Google search.
I can't. Oh no. Was he like
everybody was mortified. Everybody had a bad time. But like I couldn't explain
why.
Well, there's a girl on the internet who's keeping a rock
in there.
And he didn't know what it was. So that happened to me today, and I've barely survived since.
I'm very happy that you're here, because I would have probably, like, RIP'd myself.
Oh, yeah.
Out there.
I have never wanted to be swallowed up by the earth more.
Yeah. No, I get that.
In that moment.
TikTok today showed me a video of a girl going through security at an airport, and the airport security, like, opening her bag, and right on top was a vibrating personal toy.
Mm-hmm.
And
a personal massager.
Yeah, you see the girl realize what's gonna happen and can't stop it.
You can't tell TSA, like, oh no, don't open that.
Right. That means they're definitely gonna open it. That.
Yeah.
And the TSA guy, like, opens it and then shuts it and gives her the most shameful look. I mean, his eyeballs were popping out of his head.
Well, listen, what's a girl gonna do when she's traveling alone?
You gotta have it.
What else are you gonna do? Just be on vacation?
No. Right. No.
No.
Cure for boredom.
Right. Exactly. Late night. It's like, it's better than a melatonin.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Organic. If you can't sleep, sore butt is fine. Yeah.
Homemade.
Homemade is just fine. I saw a TikTok of this girl who was traveling to South Africa, I think. And she also brought her personal massager with her. Personal massagers are not allowed.
Oh, no.
And old girl got detained by airport security for trying to smuggle in illegal...
contraband.
Yep. Contraband.
Wow.
Yikes. So...
Lord, please never let that be me.
Research where you're going.
Before you just toss Chuck things into your bag.
Before you just be loading up lithium ion batteries into your bag.
Lord, lordy.
Just make sure.
Wow.
Hey, there's a cat who's thinking about being my friend.
Oh, is a Rooney.
I feel like we do this every... Oh, this is actually the episode that airs before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Right after.
Mm-hmm.
To recap.
Recap.
We had a great Thanksgiving.
Yep. Thanksgiving at my house. Jenny went to Minnesota. She went to Mall of America. I made too much food.
You'll hear all about it in the grab bag.
Next week.
Just hang in there.
On Tuesday.
Keep on keeping on. You'll get there. We'll get the timeline situated.
Yeah. Yeah.
At some point.
So, anything else new that you want to recap before we get started?
You know, not real. There's not a whole lot. I get married in 24 days from this day.
That's crazy.
When this episode comes out. Hold on. When does this episode come out?
Friday.
Right. The they third. All come out on Friday.
The third, I think. Friday. I said it was such
confidence.
So sure.
You know what? I just was going to keep rolling with it and be like, ah, yes, Friday, of course. Of course.
Well, sometimes we record like in advance, and that's not what we're doing right now.
No,
we're Taylor, like actually in the real timeline.
Which is weird for us.
It is weird for us.
But it's getting a little... We got to get back on like a week ahead. We're cutting it a little too close.
A little too close for comfort.
Too close for comfort.
We're going to figure it out.
Yeah, we'll get there. Just, you know what?
You know what? We haven't never not figured it out.
That's true.
So.
We've always had something.
Yeah.
Happening.
Yeah.
So.
We're like in this at like 18 months.
Golly gee. What episode number is this? We're creeping up on 100.
Yeah, I think this might be 88.
Holy mackerel.
I know. Can you believe 88?
No. Our dedication to this thing that we made up is unreal.
I know. Literally no one is forcing us to do this.
No, it's just us.
It's just us.
But we hold ourselves to such a strict
standard.
I was going to say high, but it's not.
No.
It's not like, a high standard.
It's not. It is a strict standard, though.
Yes. Yes.
Like, I don't care who's mad at us.
No, it could.
This is going to be happening.
The content could be total dog shit.
We don't care.
We are putting out content, though.
Yes.
For you to consume.
Yes, ma'am.
Consume.
I'm going to really need Spotify to figure it out, though. We've heard that a couple people are having issues with Spotify. I'm so sorry. I don't know why that's happening.
I don't know why that's happening either. But if you do have an issue with any, like, just let us know. Message us, get on the Facebook, the Twitter, the Instagram.
Yeah, there's a ton of places that like aren't having issues, so I'm sure somebody else can point you in the direction of somewhere that's not having issues. But like, I never have issues with Spotify, so I always get in and I'm like, I don't know what's happening
until,
because like I'll have access to it,
mm-hmm.
and I'll be able to listen to it on Spotify.
Well, but I never can't. Listen on Spotify. I listen on Anchor after you edit the episodes,
right?
So I don't really go on the actual platforms and
check
listen,
it out.
And if I'm being very honest, I don't really, I have not really listened.
You don't even listen to us?
No. I'm here. I've already listened. I've already heard the thing that I'm talking about for like 2 weeks prior.
Right.
To it. So no,
you
I
just
do
really trust my editing a lot.
I do. Well, and it's mostly, it's one, you're very trustworthy and I know it's like going to get done and get done well. But it's mostly I can't bear to listen to myself talk.
Oh.
And it's not like, oh, my voice sounds weird. Like, it does. Like, but it's mostly like I listen to myself and I'm like, God, she's fucking stupid.
No. My favorite thing when I'm listening back or if I'm editing and one of us makes a joke, I will think the thing that I say. Before I say it. Because then it's still funny.
Your brain is consistent.
It's still funny to me.
Oh, okay. I love it.
Who's going first today? It is conspiracy day.
Mine's a little on the border.
Oh, mine's a good one.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'm excited. Mine's, I really like mine, but
okay.
I couldn't decide if it was like folklore or conspiracy.
Oh, okay.
So here we are.
All right.
But you, it's your turn. You go first.
Ooh, okay. I really hope I did this justice because It's a big one.
Okay.
And it kind of crosses other conspiracies. So there's things that I'm like, I can't get into this whole thing. But otherwise, this would be a 10-hour episode.
Got it.
But there's a lot of, like, sprinkles.
Okay.
A conspiracy sprinkle.
Hit me with it.
All right. So I have my sources are the Conspiracy Theories Podcast, Atlas Obscura, an article by Ross Rosenbaum, and an article on The Atlantic by Buster Brown.
Okay.
I have a foreword.
Yes.
There's a chill in the air on this misty spring evening. A student of Yale University walks home after a study session with friends. They pull their coat in a little tighter and listen to the sounds around them. It's not unusual for another student to be out around this time, but the campus looks deserted. As they continue to walk, they hear footfalls coming from behind. They increase the speed as the student moves to the right to let the other student pass. They feel a tight grip on their shoulder. Before they could say anything, the other student is hurrying past. In that moment, they realize it's tap day, and they've just been chosen for the Skull and Bones.
What?
The Skull and Bones.
What?
The Secret Society?
I have never heard of this.
Jenny.
What's Tap Day?
Oh, you've never heard of the Skull and Bones?
No.
They're a secret society at Yale.
What?
Homie.
I've never once in my life.
Okay, hold on. I need to rearrange. I gotta get all kinds of fucking ready here.
Okay. You're gonna be doing a lot of explaining to me.
That's okay. All right, you just let me know when you have questions.
All right, I will. I promise you I will.
Okay, so the Skull and Bone Society was founded in 1832 by William Huntington Russell and his buddy Alfonso Taft. Some sources say that it was formed when there was a dispute about awards for another fraternity at Yale called Phi Beta Kappa. I found some conflicting info on sources saying how William Russell grew up. Some say that he didn't have much money at all, while others, I would say the majority, say that he grew up very wealthy and his family ran a company called Russell and Company, which was an opium empire.
Ooh, all right.
In the early 1830s, Russell went to Germany to study abroad and spend time with a student there, and this student was a part of a secret society in Germany. Russell loved the mystery, secrecy, and power that was afforded to the members. We don't know much about the society at all, what it was called, what happened, or even the name of the student Russell befriended. But we know that that time had an impact on Russell. However, some claim that it was a branch of the Illuminati.
Ooh.
So we believe that he took some ideas from this society, like the idea that the collective is more important than the individual. Put the needs of the group before the needs of the personal needs of the group. When he came back to the U.S. and looked at the honor society he was a part of, he decided that it needed more of an air of secrecy. He met with his best buddy, Alfonso Taft, and they decided to start their own, more exclusive society. They rounded up 13 more of the most prominent and well-connected students at Yale and together founded the Skull and Bone Society. They took an oath not to reveal any details about the group to non-members. They maintained that they were a men's fraternity and their goal was to connect like-minded students.
Mm-hmm.
However, people believe that there are more nefarious plans at hand.
Ew.
The organization itself goes by a few different names. The Brotherhood of Death, the Order of the Skull and the Bones, the Order, and Order 322. They adopted the number 322 as it appears on a lot of their insignia. The emblem of the society is a skull and crossbones with the number 322 beneath it. It is a number generally taken to refer to the year 322 BCE of the death of a Greek orator, which was a turning point in the transformation of ancient Athens from democracy to plutocracy. One legend is that 322 represents founded in 32, like the year 1932, second corps, referring to the first corps in the known German university. But truthfully, we may never know what those numbers mean.
Okay.
In 1856, long after William Russell had graduated from Yale, he created the Russell Association. It was a financial safety blanket for the society. As members of the Skull and Bones graduated and started making money, they would donate a portion of their income to the Skull and Bones Society Trust. This ensured that the society would live on for many years to come. In addition to the contributions to the trust, the society made contributions to Yale itself in the form of a building just for the Skull and Bones Society.
Yeah.
The society's clubhouse is a monumental brownstone building in New Haven, Connecticut, and it is called the Tomb. Originally, it was built in 1856. The tomb was doubled in size in 1903 and has since been further enlarged. The doors remained locked with two padlocks, and it is quite the imposing structure. It is bare, symmetrical, and windowless. It's almost like a mausoleum.
Ugh.
To this day, it is said that only the members of the Skull and Bones are allowed inside. One anonymous bonesman let it slip that there are words engraved in the walls of the tomb.
Bonesman?
Yes.
We call them the boners.
The boners. That's what they call themselves.
The bonesmen. Alrighty.
Let it slip that there are words engraved in the walls of the tomb. They are in German, but translate to, who was the fool? Who was the wise man? Beggar or king? Whether poor or rich, all's the same in death.
Yeah.
The tomb itself is supposedly riddled with death-related artifacts, from skeletons, skulls, coffins, funeral equipment, and artwork all adorn the walls within the tomb. Some of the skeletons and skulls are said to be real and not artificial. The most famous and controversial of all these human remains is said to be the skull and bones of the famous Apache warrior Geronimo.
Geronimo!
Yes. At some point in the 1870s, rumors were spreading like wildfire about the skull and bones. One of the more widely believed rumors was that the skull and bones had gotten control of Yale's finances. To make matters more secretive and interesting, most student newspapers had blackout agreements with the Skull and Bones, which meant that they would not print anything about the society.
Weird. Mm-hmm. Censorship. Okay.
However, one student newspaper did not have that agreement, and in 1873, one brave student journalist found that Yale was having money issues and drew conclusions that brought it back to the Skull and Bone members, as they were the most wealthy students.
Mm.
The overarching theme of the piece was that they believed that the Skull and Bones were taking over Yale completely. And while there is no proof of this, it is interesting that according to Anthony C. Sutton, author of America's Secret Establishment, every president of Yale since 1871 has either been a bonesman or a direct relation of a bonesman.
Ooh, that's a little sus.
Yep. This article would be the last article published about the Skull and Bones for over a century.
Oh, damn.
They said, shut the fuck up.
Be quiet about it.
Please don't.
Ew. I wonder if he, like, had threats.
Right. I imagine that he probably did.
Oh, I'm sure.
One of the reasons conspiracy theorists are so obsessed with the Skull and Bone Society is their dedication to secrecy and the fact that the same names keep popping up on the roster of members. For example, the Bush family has had ties to the Skull and Bones for over a century.
Oh!
At least six Bush family members have been members of the Skull and Bones, starting with Prescott Bush in 1916.
Say swear.
Swear. It is believed that Prescott Bush is actually the person that stole Geronimo's skull as a part of his initiation. This rumor gained so much traction in the descendants of Geronimo attempted to sue the Skull and Bones for the remains of their ancestor, but the suit was unsuccessful.
Yee.
Speaking of initiation, there are a few different accounts of what happens during the initiation process. From small hazing rituals to absolutely horrifying, we may never know exactly what happens. But there have been a few leaks. We know that bonesmen chose their next class carefully, and the selection takes place in the spring. They choose juniors that'll be going into their senior year. They tap their shoulders as an indication of invitation to the Skull and Bones. Later, all the recruits meet at the tomb where the official ceremony begins. This is where things get a little fuzzy. It could be false trails to keep outsiders away from the truth, or it could be that the initiation changes every year. We just don't know for sure, but a few stories have made it through.
Ooh.
We owe a lot of what we know to Ron Rosenbaum. Rosenbaum went to Yale and has always had an intense curiosity when it came to the Skull and Bones. He did not get tapped and made it his mission to understand the inner workings of the society. even when people warned him not to get too close. In fact, while he was digging for his first article, which was published in 1977, one of the sources asked him where he banked. Rosenbaum told him, and the source said, "The alumni still care. Don't laugh. They don't like people tampering or prying. The power of the bones is incredible. They've got their hands in every level of power in the country. You'll see. It's like trying to look into the mafia."
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's unnerving.
Yep. Nevertheless, Rosenbaum spoke to a few bonesmen and their friends despite the fear of being exposed. One of the more poignant paragraphs from his article says, "You could ask Supreme Court Justice Potter Stewart if there came a time in the year 1937 when he dressed up in a skeleton suit and howled wildly at an initiate in a red velvet room inside the tomb. You could ask McGeorge Bundy if he wrestled naked in a mud pile as a part of his initiation and how it compared to a later quagmire into which he so eagerly plunged.
Ooh.
You could ask Bill Bundy or Bill Buckley, both of whom went to the CIA after leaving the bones, or George Bush, who ran the CIA, whether their skull and bones experiences were useful in training for the clandestine trade."
George Bush was in the CIA?
Yes.
Junior? Or big boy?
I don't know.
Okay.
You could ask J. Richardson Dilworth, the bonesman who now manages the Rockefeller fortune, just how wealthy the Bone Society is and whether it's true that each new initiate gets a no-strings-attached gift of $15,000 cash and guaranteed financial security for life.
Wow.
You could ask, but I think you get the idea.
Ew, hold on, wait, that gave me chills. So gross.
It's really weird.
Okay.
Throughout his journalism career, Rosenbaum always came back to the Skull and Bones Society, but he said that if you mention the word skull and bones in front of a true bonesman, he will immediately get up and remove himself from the room in order to avoid interrogation.
Wow.
But back to the possible initiation rituals. In 1940, the ritual was said to go like this. A newly initiated bonesman would be placed in a coffin and carried to the central part of the tomb. The man would chant, "Reborn, reborn, reborn," over and over again until he was removed from the coffin, given a set of robes and a bone with his name carved into it. Then he would take the bone and toss it into a heap at the start of every new meeting.
It's kind of a cute gift.
A cute gift. In some instances of the initiation, the rumor is said that they would all be plunged into a mud pit naked and wrestle.
Ah, nice.
I mean, whatever.
A little hot.
Yeah. According to Rosenbaum's article, in his senior year, each member of Bones goes through an intense two-part confessional experience in the Bones crypt. On Thursday night, he tells his life story, giving what it is meant to be a painfully forthright autobiography that exposes his traumas, shames, and dreams.
Interesting.
Tom Wolfe calls this Bones practice a forerunner of the me decade's fascination with self. The following Sunday night session is devoted exclusively to sexual histories. They don't leave out anything these days. I don't know what it's like in General Russell's day, but maybe there was less to talk about. But these days, the sexual stuff is totally explicit, and there is less need for fabricating exploits to fill up the allotted time. Most Sunday night sessions start with the talk of prep school masturbation and don't stop until the intimate details of Saturday night's delights have come to the light in early Monday morning.
Ooh.
The idea is that if a person spills the beans about the skull and bones, his most personal experiences would be shared with the world and would bring him to ruin. I believe this is why so many bonesmen end up in the CIA. Wouldn't you want people who had lifelong experiences with keeping other people's secrets? They're masters at it by the time they graduate from Yale.
Wow.
In fact, they are better at keeping bone secrets than they are keeping their oath of marriage. Many women have found that their lovers have gone to the Bones meetings and spilled about their personal and private love lives to the group. They will always tell their bones and brothers and bones. One of the most interesting thoughts I found in Rosenbaum's article was the idea that toxic masculinity is almost dissolved in the bones.
Interesting. I like that.
You have to trust the other men with your most inner intimate thoughts from the get-go. It's like an immediate bonding with these other 14 men.
It's like forcing you to trauma bond.
Yes, exactly. And once you do that, you become stronger than ever. You're bonded. If, you know, you're not going to tell their secrets because you don't want them to tell yours.
Yeah. Wow.
Right.
Okay. It seems it's a little culty.
It is a little culty.
Okay.
But there's no leader. Like, it, the 15 members change every year.
Wow.
Because it's the only, the seniors.
Yeah.
So they get initiated. And I think one senior stays behind to, like, explain how things go. And then
it's up to the next group.
It's up to the next group.
Interesting. I wonder if they have a secret handshake.
Oh, I'm sure it's something.
Yeah.
In addition to the tomb, the bones have another sacred place held for events called Deer Island.
Hmm.
Deer Island is a resort island owned and maintained by the Russell Trust Association in the St. Lawrence River.
Okay.
There, the bones hold an annual retreat for alumni and their families.
Hmm.
This is a place for new recruits to rub elbows with the most powerful people that have been in the society before them, and a place for them to meet their daughters. As Rosenbaum says, he can also meet the wives of the bonesmen of all ages and get a sense of what kind of woman is the most acceptable and appropriate in the bone society, and perhaps...
Appropriate?
Yep. Even meet that the most acceptable types of women, the daughter of a bonesman. So they want them to intermarry.
Ew.
This gives me certain really gross eugenics vibes that I'm not here for, but I'm sure that that's part of the reason. They want to keep their genes within certain families. Unfortunately, there are members of the Bones that have gone on to be proponents of this idea, and that just fuels the fire of the conspiracy theories everywhere. There's a few conspiracy theories about the Bones and eugenics stuff, but...
Is it like the anti-Semitic point of no return?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll kind of get into, like... who they allow
okay
into the bones, which is kind of surprising.
Okay.
But yeah, they're picky.
Got it.
Of course, the members of the Skull and Bones want specific genes if they're going to take over the world. Speaking of conspiracy theories, we can't talk about the Skull and Bones without talking about the assassination of JFK.
Oh, for the love of Peter. Okay.
So I'm not going to get into that whole conspiracy because that's an episode in and of itself, but there are quite a large amount of conspiracy theorists that believe that Lee Harvey Oswald did not act alone on November 22nd, 1963. JFK had a progressive agenda that many people believe would have been harmful to the elite and powerful conservatives of the time. There were many bonesmen that would have been negatively affected by JFK's ideas. In a very 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon way... People have connected Lee Harvey Oswald to the Skull and Bones.
Okay.
Namely, Mr. George Bush, who was also in Texas the day of the assassination. Although
Well, of course he was.
Right.
He lived in Texas.
Texas is he fucking huge. He was a child.
There were a lot of people in Texas that day.
I think this was George Bush Sr.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Starting his political career at the time.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So he was also in Texas that day, although later he would say he didn't remember exactly where he was that day.
What?
Which is hard to believe because we all tend to remember exactly where we were on historical event days.
Yeah, my mom knows exactly where she was on when he was assassinated.
Yep.
Yeah.
So.
I don't believe that.
I don't believe that. But who knows? He was a busy man at the time. After the assassination, there are documents showing that Bush was debriefed as a member of the CIA years before he was actually officially in the CIA.
Really?
He was not in the CIA until 1972, and this was 1963.
Yeah. Okay. Ew.
Mm-hmm.
Sus. Go on.
Suspect. Speaking of the CIA... People believe that the Skull and Bones created the Central Intelligence Agency, and the agency recruits outgoing graduates from Yale. After World War II, President Truman decided to restructure the way that the U.S. looked at intelligence during wartime. He went to Robert Lovett, who was a renowned military person, general, major, I don't know. But some felt that Truman didn't pick Lovett because of his military prowess, but rather because of his well-connected past. his membership in the Skull and Bones.
Okay.
While Lovett resigned rather than taking point on this, the next in line created the Lovett Committee in his honor and appointed Lovett as chair.
Hmm.
I'm thinking, obviously, this guy wanted nothing to do with this, but y'all won't leave him alone. But the Lovett Committee consisted of 7 high-ranking military officials and became the framework for the Central Intelligence Agency. Finally, in 1947, the government approved the CIA as a government agency. Lovett actually did come back to spearhead the newly formed agency, and of course he brought some buddies with him.
Sure.
And you know it, they were Bonesmen.
Great. Of course. Who else would he pick?
As I mentioned before, my thought is that of course they'd want people who are good at keeping secrets in the Central Intelligence Agency. The opposition argues that students graduating from Yale are just more well-versed in foreign policy, and that's what makes them good at
Is that
CIA.
It? Convenient.
Right. The elitist mentality of the early 1900s didn't last forever. Bones began admitting people of color in 1949, Jewish people in the 1950s, and gay and bisexual members in the 70s.
Okay.
It took a while to get women involved, however, as they were the last group to be admitted in the 1990s.
Ew, that's a little late for me.
As Brown says in his article in The Atlantic, 15 Yale seniors are tapped annually to join the ranks of Skull and Bones. Their names published in the Yale tabloid Rumpus at the end of every school year.
Rumpus!
Yep. The class of 2010 included more ethnic minorities than Caucasians. In 2011, delegation included 2 gay students plus 1 bisexual and 1 transgendered student. Last year, women and men were equally split, according to Yale's familiar with the members. While the Skull and Bones isn't the only secret society in the United States, for some reason, they have become the most well-known. Their secrets are legendary, their membership powerful, and their legacy ongoing.
Gross, Taylor!
And that is the Skull and Bones!
You did such a good job! Ew!
I'm obsessed with them. Obsessed. I need to know everything. I read the Rosenbaum article was 15 pages long.
Woo!
Like printed single spaced pages.
Okay.
Had to shorten that guy. But he went on, seriously, the article I read was, I think, in 1971. And he was publishing articles on the Skull and Bones into like the 90s.
Wow.
That was his biggest obsession as a journalist. He could not let it go. And I just
was he obsessed because he wasn't invited?
In his first article, he's like, I know that this is gonna sound like I'm just salty about not getting invited, but I promise it's because I'm just so fucking curious.
Okay.
I was like, I don't know if I believe it, but well, I appreciate a dog with a bone.
Yes.
No pun intended.
That was a good one.
Thank you.
Okay, I don't have a foreword. For mine. Mine's
bummer.
Not. I know. Mine's not cool. Okay. Russian researchers in the late 1940s.
Mm-hmm.
So we're already in like prime conspiracy.
Uh-huh. Cold War.
Cold War. Russian.
Communist.
Uh-huh.
Agendas.
Yes, ma'am. Tried to keep 5 people awake for 15 days using.
No.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Using an experimental gas-based stimulant.
Oh, no.
They were kept in a sealed environment to carefully monitor their oxygen intake so the gas didn't kill them since it was toxic in high concentrations. This was before closed-circuit cameras, so they had only microphones in 5-inch thick glass porthole-sized windows.
5-inch thick? That'd be thick.
That she a little thicky, that little porthole window.
Damn.
Uh-huh. The chamber was stocked with books, cots to sleep on, but no bedding, running water, toilet, and enough dried food to last all 5 people for over a month.
Whoa.
Yeah. The test subjects were political prisoners, deemed enemies of the state during World War II.
Okay.
Everything was fine for the first 5 days. Subjects hardly complained, having been promised falsely that they would be freed if they submitted to the test and did not sleep for 30 days. What?
They didn't complain?
They didn't complain for the first 5 days.
Listen, I would give myself approximately 25 hours to not complain.
I was going to say like 25 minutes. I will bellyache at any given chance.
Listen, if you told me like I wasn't going to sleep for like a long period of time, I would at least give myself one sleep cycle to be like, I can get through this.
Yeah.
I can do it.
They're giving them a gas, a stimulant to keep them awake.
Part of the joy of sleeping is to escape the boredom of life. How are you going to be so bored?
Well, they gave them magazines or something, I'm sure.
I feel like they just had to stare at each other.
You better give me like a word search and a handheld Yahtzee. Otherwise, I'm going to lose my marbles.
Jesus. All right, continue. I'm going to try not to interrupt you.
Oh, you're okay. Please do. Their conversations and activities were monitored, and it was noted that they continued to talk about increasingly traumatic incidences in their past. And the general tone of their conversations took on a very dark aspect around the 4-day mark.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
After 5 days, they started to complain about the circumstances and events that led them to where they were, and they started to demonstrate some severe paranoia. They stopped talking to each other and began alternately whispering into the microphones and in the one-way, like, mirrored portholes.
I don't like... God. That gave me full body chills. I don't like it.
Oddly, they all seemed to think that they could win the trust of the experimenters by turning over their comrades and other test subjects that were in the in captivity with them.
They were like, you can have him.
Right. They were like talking shit about everybody else that they're with. At first, the researchers suspected that this was an effect of the gas itself.
Okay.
So after 9 days... The first of them started screaming.
Nine days.
He ran the length of the chamber, repeatedly yelling at the top of his lungs for 3 hours straight. He continued attempting to scream, but was only able to produce occasional squeaks.
Oh, God.
The researchers postulated that he had physically torn his vocal cords. The most surprising thing about this behavior is how the other captives reacted to it. Or rather, lack thereof. They didn't react to it at all. They continued whispering into the microphone until the second of the captives started to scream. Two non-screaming captives took the books apart, smeared page after page with their own feces, and pasted them calmly over the glass portholes. The screaming promptly stopped. So did the whispering to the microphones.
So you got poop pages.
Poop pages stuck to the windows.
Please don't watch me.
To the windows.
To the walls.
And no microphones.
Okay. So they just stopped using the microphones.
Yes.
Okay.
And then 3 more days passed without a word. Hide nor hair.
Did they check on them to see if they're still alive?
Well.
Okay. You're going to tell me.
I'll get there. 3 more days passed. The researchers checked the microphones hourly to make sure that they were working, since they thought it was impossible that no sound could be coming with 5 people inside. The oxygen consumption in the chamber indicated that all 5 must still be alive. In fact, it was the amount of oxygen 5 people would consume at a very heavy level of strenuous exercise.
Oh, that's weird.
So they're like panting.
Ooh, I don't like it.
On the morning of the 14th day, the researchers did something that they said they would not do to get a reaction from the captives. They used the intercom inside the chamber, hoping to provoke any response from them. They were afraid they were either like dead or in a vegetative comatose state. They announced, "We are opening the chamber to test the microphones. Step away from the door and lie flat on the floor or you will be shot. Compliance will earn you, one of you, your immediate freedom."
What?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
To their surprise, they heard a single phrase in a calm voice respond, "We no longer want to be freed." Debate broke out among the researchers and the military forces funding the research. Unable to provoke any more response using the intercom, it was finally decided to open the chamber at midnight on the 15th day. chamber was flushed out of the simulate gas and filled with fresh air, and immediately voices from the microphones began to object. Three different voices began begging, as if pleading for the life of a loved one, to turn the gas back on. The chamber was opened and soldiers sent in to retrieve the test subjects. They began to scream louder than ever, and so did the soldiers when they saw what was inside. Four of the five subjects were still alive, although no one could rightly call the state that they were in life. The food rations past day five had not been so much as touched. There were chunks of meat from the dead test subjects' thighs and chest stuffed into the drain in the center of the chamber, blocking it and allowing around 4 inches of water to accumulate on the floor. Precisely how much of the water was on the floor that was actually blood was never determined. All four surviving test subjects also had large portions of muscle and skin torn away from their bodies. The destruction of flesh and exposed bone on their fingertips indicated that the wounds were inflicted by hand, not with teeth, as the researchers initially thought.
Ooh.
Closer examination of the positions and angles of the wounds indicated that most, if not all of them, were self-inflicted. The abdominal organ... The tummy organs below the ribcage... The tummy organs below the ribcage of all four test subjects had been removed, while the heart, lungs, and diaphragm remained in place. The skin and most of the muscles attached to the ribs had been ripped off, exposing the lungs through the ribcage. All the blood vessels and organs remained intact. They had just been taken out and laid on the floor, fanning out around the eviscerated but still living bodies of the subjects. The digestive tract in all four could be seen to be working, digesting food. It quickly became apparent that what they were digesting was their own flesh that they had ripped off and eaten over the course of days.
Oh, Lord.
Most of the soldiers were Russian special operatives at the facility, but still many refused to return to the chamber to remove the test subjects. They continued to scream to be left in the chamber and alternatively begged and demanded that the gas be turned back on, lest they fall asleep. To everyone's surprise, the test subjects put up a fierce fight in the process of being removed from the chamber. One of the Russian soldiers died from having his throat ripped out.
Oh, God.
Another was gravely injured by having his testicles ripped off and an artery in his leg severed by one of the subjects' teeth. Another five of the soldiers lost their lives, if you could count ones that committed suicide in the weeks following the incident. In the struggle, one of the four living subjects had his spleen ruptured and he bled out almost immediately. The medical researchers attempted to sedate him, but this proved impossible. He was injected with more than 10 times of the human dose of a morphine derivative and still fought like a cornered animal, breaking the ribs and arm of one doctor that tried to check him out.
Even after he hadn't eaten for, like, 10 days?
He'd eaten his own organs and flesh.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
Yeah. When the heart was seen to beat for a full 2 minutes after he had bled out to the point that there was more air in his vascular system than blood. Even after it stopped, he continued to scream and flail for another 3 minutes, struggling to attack anyone in reach, and just repeated the word, "more." Over and over and over again.
Oh.
Weaker and weaker until finally he fell silent. The surviving three test subjects were heavily restrained and moved to a medical facility. The two with intact vocal cords continuously begged for the gas, demanding to be kept awake. The most injured of the three was taken to the only surgical operating room that the facility had. In the process of preparing the subject to have his organs placed back within his body, it was found that he was effectively immune to the sedative that they had given him to prepare for the surgery. He fought furiously against his restraints when the anesthetic gas was brought out to put him under. He managed to tear most of the way through a 4-inch wide leather strap on one wrist, even though the weight of a 200-pound soldier was holding that wrist down as well.
Jesus.
It only took a little more anesthetic than normal to put him under, and the instant his eyelids fluttered and closed, his heart stopped. In the autopsy of the test subject that died on the operating table, it was found that his blood had triple the normal amount of oxygen. His muscles that were still attached to his skeleton were badly torn, and he had broken 9 bones in the struggle to not be subdued. Most of them were from the force of his own muscles had exerted on them.
What?
So, like, his own muscles broke his bones.
That's terrifying.
The second survivor had been the first of the group of 5 to start screaming. His vocal cords destroyed, he was only able to beg or object to surgery, and he only reacted by shaking his head violently in disapproval when the anesthetic gas was brought near him. He shook his head when someone suggested reluctantly that they try the surgery without anesthetic and did not react for the entire 6-hour procedure of replacing his abdominal or tummy organs.
The abdominal snowman organs.
The abdominal snow organs. and attempted to cover them with what remained of his skin. The surgeon presided stated repeatedly that it should be medically impossible for the patient to still be alive. One terrified nurse assisting the surgery stated that she had seen the patient's mouth curl into a smile several times whenever his eyes met hers.
Ew, ew, ew. That made me very gross on the inside.
Hang on. Let me get through this paragraph.
Okay.
When the surgery ended, the subject looked at the surgeon and began to wheeze loudly, attempting to talk while struggling. Assuming this must be something of drastic importance, the surgeon had a pen and pad fetched so the patient could write down his message. It was simple. Keep cutting.
I don't think I like it.
Oh, you don't think you like it?
No.
You don't think you care for it a lot?
I don't. I think I would pass.
Okay.
Actually, if given the option.
You're not getting the option.
I know. I signed up for this nonsense.
The other 2 test subjects given the same surgery, both without anesthetic as well, although they had to be injected with a paralytic for a duration of the operation. The surgeon found it impossible to perform the operation while the patients laughed continuously.
Oh, God. Ew.
Once paralyzed, the subjects could only follow the attending researchers with their eyes. The paralytic cleared their system in an abnormally short period of time, and they were soon trying to escape their bonds. The moment they could speak again, they were asking for the gas. The researchers tried asking why they had injured themselves, why they ripped out their own guts, and why they wanted to be given the gas again. Only one response was given. I must remain awake. All 3 subjects' restraints were reinforced and they were placed back into the chamber awaiting determination as to what should be done with them. The researchers, facing the wrath of their military benefactors, having failed the stated goals for the project, considered euthanizing the subjects. The commanding officer, former KGB agent, instead saw potential and wanted to see what would happen if they would put back on the gas.
Potential?
Mm-hmm. The researchers strongly objected but were overruled.
Yikes.
In preparation for being sealed in the chamber again, the subjects were connected to an EEG monitor and had their restraints padded for long-term confinement. To everyone's surprise, all 3 stopped struggling the moment it was let slip that they were going back on the gas. It was obvious that at this point, the 3 were putting up a great struggle to stay awake. One of the subjects that could speak was humming loudly and continuously. The mute subject was straining his legs against the leather bonds with all of his might, first left, then right, then left, for something to focus on. The remaining subject was holding his head off of his pillow and blinking rapidly. Having been the first to be wired for the EEG, most of the researchers were monitoring his brain waves in surprise. They were normal most of the time, but sometimes flatlined inexplicably. It looked as if he were repeatedly suffering from brain death before returning to normal. As they focused on paper scrolling out the brainwave monitor, only one nurse saw his eyes slip shut at the same moment his head hit the pillow. His brainwaves immediately changed to that of a deep sleep, then flatlined for the last time as his heart simultaneously stopped.
Oof.
The only remaining subject that could speak started screaming to be sealed in now. His brainwave showed the same flatlines as the one who just died from falling asleep. The commander gave the order to seal the chamber with both subjects inside as well as 3 researchers. One of the named 3 immediately drew his gun and shot the commander point blank between the eyes, then turned his gun on the mute subject and blew his brains out as well.
Oh my God.
He pointed the gun at the remaining subject still restrained to a bed as the remaining members of the medical and research team fled the room. I won't be locked in here with these things, not with you. He screamed at the man strapped to the table. What are you? He demanded. I must know. The subject smiled. Have you forgotten so easily? The subject asked. We are you. We are the madness that lurks within you all, begging to be free at every moment in your deepest animal mind. We are what you hide from in your beds every night. We are what you sedate into silence and paralysis when you go to the nocturnal haven where we cannot tread. The researcher paused, then aimed at the subject's heart and fired. The EEG flatlined as the subject weakly choked out. So nearly free. So.
That's horrible.
It is. While many creepypasta stories have, like, clear influence from older folklore traditions, what makes the Russian sleep experiment story so unsettling and horrifically plausible is its proximity to the truth.
Hold on. Did you just tell me a lie?
No. I did not tell you a lie.
Okay.
Oh, I'm breaking stuff.
Are you good?
Not an entire lie.
Okay. You told a half-truth.
I told a half-truth. And that is, like, the summary of this. That, suggesting that the events recounted took place in the late 1940s, the addition of black and white and period photographs, which will be on the Instagram, authors and posters place, quote, fictional events within the same decade as real-life atrocities of the Holocaust, where we know that...
sleep experiments happened, right?
Incredibly cruel experiments were being held
right
on people. And Russia, don't be mad at me, I'm sorry. Russia also was doing sleep experiments.
Okay.
Like this. And they were doing experiments with stimulants and drugs to keep soldiers, because they were trying to, and Germany was doing this too with what's his face, who was doing all the twin experiments.
Oh yeah.
To try to create super soldiers.
Yeah.
So this creepypasta, and there you can fall into a rabbit hole, which I did, where there are people who are like, this is 100% absolutely true. This is what happened when they gave people stimulant gas and did not let them sleep.
I mean, I could see them, like, twisting it to be like, this did not happen, this is fake, to make people believe that.
And hence the conspiracy, that this has been diluted into, it's just a creepypasta on Reddit, and it, nothing like, no, like, it's too cruel, too out there for this to ever be a thing. But we know for a fact that the, maybe not this exact subject matter,
mm-hmm.
but this was a very real thing. And there are, like, medical reports and, like, Russian government documents about this.
Yes.
Now, like, has it been, like, embellished upon?
Oh, sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But is the conspiracy, like, this actually happened? And so to do damage control, they turned it into this thing. Or is it all just made up nonsense?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. Because we know Russia did shit like that.
Yeah. So one of the cool things, have you ever listened to the Conspiracy Theories podcast?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So one of the things that I really like that they do, they're very not gabby like us. They don't do any of their
tangents,
but they do say at the end of each kind of conspiracy,
mm-hmm.
how would you rate it? On a scale from 1 is absolutely did not happen to 10, you 100% believe it.
Yes.
Like, where does this fall?
To me,
mm-hmm.
this falls at like a 7 or 8.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think it's because we know for sure that, like, these really fucked up things were being done to people.
Yeah, that's fair.
This, like, exact, like, we are you and we are what you hide from at night. Like, that is, no. That's an embellishment.
Yeah.
But
I would 100% believe that a government somewhere has put 5 people in a room and tried to make them stay awake.
Yeah. And I'm sure that some real fucked up shit happened to them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
Horrible.
Horrible.
Isn't it gross?
Thanks for that.
You're welcome. Enjoy your nightmares.
Sleep well. Sleep we love well. You.
And this is a lesson on why not to do math.
I thought you said math.
Also math.
Also math is bad.
Also, math will also make you lose your mind. So, you know, just be careful out there.
We are anti-math and meth.
Drugs are bad.
Drugs are bad.
And so is school. And so-
Oh, God. So do you have a bright and shiny for today?
Yeah, my bright and shiny is that my wedding is right around the corner.
It is.
That's going to be my bright and shiny.
Yay.
It's so quick. I'm about to be honest. He's making an honest woman out of me.
You're about to be wed.
I'm about to be wed. I'm sticking with my like fostered pit bull narrative.
No, I hate it. I hate that narrative more than I hate anything.
It resonates with my soul. It does.
Okay.
Okay.
I mean, all right.
I'm serious, because, like, I'm crusty and, like, mean to people.
Honey, I cried when it was your birthday.
Yeah, but I tried to fight that security guard because he called me ma'am.
That, you were just too drunk at the heckin' spill campus.
Still.
You also read approximately 3 people their birth charts.
The rest of the security team
that day,
full grown men, and you know what? They entertained me. They let me sit in that security office, and we just talked about.
They were probably like, "She's safe here."
Yeah, yeah. We just had a good
love that.
But yes, anyway.
Anyway, I'm very happy that you will be wed in a very short amount of time. I will not stand by your pit bull narrative.
The streets are once again safe.
The streets.
What's your bright and shiny?
Oh gosh, my bright and shiny has to be just I am very proud of myself and my newfound ability to say what I want and what I need in my personal life.
Ooh, good for you.
And I know that Lisa, my therapist, was my bright and shiny a couple of weeks ago, and I just am very happy to be in my 30s and at a place where I can just say what I want and deserve.
This is what I need.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a thing that I'm proud of. That's my bright and shiny.
I'm proud of you too.
Thanks.
That's like a big, big growth
mm-hmm.
to have, to be able to vocalize your needs. And not only vocalize them, but like demand them and put consequences in place if they are not being met.
Timelines and boundaries.
Yeah.
Around everything.
So important.
Yep.
So, you know, put boundaries in place for those around you.
Yep.
And be kind to yourself.
And to others.
Follow us on the social media.
Oh, yeah. Do the things.
Do the things.
You know what to do.
I'm so sorry. Okay.
Bye.